The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
So I'm joined today by former Ireland international Paul McGrath. He's teamed up with Pringles this November to champion men's mental health and to encourage them to talk about their mental health. And this, if you look at Pringles tubes throughout November, you will see that the Pringles mustache has been turned into a QR code, and that QR code links you through into Mo Conversations, which is a tool for advice for people on how to open a dialogue with men about their mental health. Paul, how are you?
Not too bad.
It is appropriate that you're doing this thing, talking about mental health, because you will not remember this. It wasn't a red letter day for you, but it was a red letter day for me. I interviewed you back in, I think, 2006, 2007, when the autobiography had just come out. And I was struck by how open and forthcoming you were about all the difficulties that you had faced over the years in the autobiography. And the one thing that I didn't ask you at the time, and I have wanted to since, is why did you decide to be so open?
That was the right thing to do. You know, if you want to do a book, you know, you want to be honest with the people and tell them the reason that you don't do too much TV and stuff like that, or you're it can be a little bit shy and stuff like that. And I used, I think, the wrong methods to get over my shyness, which was alcohol. And so I wanted people to understand that, you know, I wasn't that I was just going a little bit crazy and stuff like that. It was just that I was covering something else up.
I think people have a sense that once you do a big catharsis or a big sort of opening of the closet, like writing the book, that it's everything is then different afterwards. Was it?
It was for quite a long time, yeah. But then, you know, when I think a year and 4 months passed or something, and I hadn't had a drink, and I thought, geez, this is brilliant, that I was getting loads of work. And then obviously the trip came, and I was back at square one. But then I think you have to start again, and I did that. You know, and over the years now, and it's been a lot of years, I've tripped up from time to time, but I don't really worry too much about what people think now. I just want to get, when I do trip, I want to get back to being well. So, and that might sound a bit, rude and stuff like that, but, you know, it's my life, and I'm wanting to get back and be myself again.
Have you a method when you trip up? What do you do to get well again?
Well, I get a lot of help from a lot of people and stuff like that, you know, but, you kind of learn who your friends are and stuff like that. And there's not too many people who run the other directions and stuff like that. There's an awful lot of friends that I do have. And so I think sometimes you don't realize who they are until you do trip. But it's lovely to be well at the moment.
I see you also, I was reading you talking about how to some extent you've reanalyzed relationships with people as you look back at them. Alex Ferguson is a case in point, that you felt at the time that you were poorly treated by Alex Ferguson, but that in hindsight you have come more round to seeing his perspective.
Yeah, of course, because Sir Alex, I've had a phone call from Sir Alex about doing work at Manchester United, like when I was finished as a footballer, and I was finished as a footballer completely, and just to go down and walk amongst the guests and stuff like that, and trying to get me back, trying to give me a few shillings is basically what it was to work at Manchester United. So whatever people think about him and stuff like that, he's actually a really, really decent human being.
And you have no words to say, you sold me out of this place, don't talk to me.
To Sir Alex? No, I did not. No, he was a real gentleman about it and stuff like that. So no, I'm not one of those. You know, there's certain times that he shouted at me and stuff like that, but I needed it. I needed someone to shout and say, "Cop on to yourself." And he's done both things to me, but I admire him for having me back down at Old Trafford and giving me a job.
Did any of those interventions, whether it's Charlton or Ferguson or anything else, if you are in the throes of alcoholism, does being shouted at by anybody, does it make a blind bit of difference?
It didn't to me anyway. Sometimes you actually appreciate when people are shouting at you, because at least they're acknowledging you, you're relevant, you know, in some way. It might be not the greatest way to be to be handled and stuff like that. But I think by and large, he wanted me just to wake up and understand that me and alcohol don't go together.
I read recently, and you can tell me if I'm wrong on this, am I right in saying that you are on the edge of getting the bus pass?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Thanks for that. That's nice.
It's something to look forward to. You know,
well, it is as well. Yeah.
In that context, if you look back to the young Paul McGrath, now that you are the senior man, what advice, if any, would you give him?
Don't ever start drinking. That's the only advice I'd give myself. Honestly, just don't start drinking. I drank just to cover my shyness and, you know, and obviously the drink takes over and you become a bit of a slave to that. So, you know, but again, having said that, though, I still enjoyed my life. I've enjoyed playing football while even a little bit shaky and stuff like that. I've enjoyed trying to manage myself through a certain games, which is sounds a bit ridiculous, but being a little drunk, I suppose.
Oh, well, I remember, I can't remember the exact which game it was, but again, going back to when I was talking about the autobiography, wasn't there one instance where you had the vast majority of a bottle of brandy and then took to the pitch?
Once.
Let me rephrase that. Were there numerous instances?
It wasn't as bad as people. Some people think that I went out on the football pitch every time blind drunk, and I didn't do that. You know, I was a little shaky sometimes, but it wasn't as bad as some people were saying. But it still left me at a disadvantage to go out and play against some of the players that I played with or played against. But, you know, it, in some ways it worked. You know, I came through, and I don't mean it was the right thing to do, but I came through those games okay.
Do you find yourself reanalyzing any of the games thinking? I mean, obviously, it is a difficult thing to say to Paul McGrath how much better you could have been given how good you were. But do you look at it and think, I left some of it, I didn't give it the full shot because of the drink?
Yes. I honestly do say that to myself, because then because you're letting down your teammates, you know. So there's times I've tripped up in the box, or people have left me sitting on the floor and put the ball in the back of the net, and I think to myself, oh, Jesus, you know.
Not many.
No, but it could have been down to me. And so, yeah, there's moments that I still think about now, and I think, oh, if I hadn't have went out the night before that game, I could have done a little bit better. I mean, might have not just jumped into a tackle or something. But sure, it's been done now, and you know, and I've really no regrets about any of the games.
Whatever bad regrets, what are your moments of greatest pride when you're sitting thinking back on your career, those quiet days? What are the ones you think that was the absolute pinnacle?
There's so many of them that, like, you know, I couldn't really pick one out. But the beating the Italians, I think, in America was one of the best games I think I've played for Ireland anyway. So yeah, that probably would be the, and they'd beaten us in 1990, obviously, and knocked us out in the quarterfinals. So yeah, that would be it.
As a function of that, what are the things that people talk to you about? Because you're now retired. How long are you retired out of the game?
An awful long time.
An awful lot of time,
basically.
Across that period, do you notice a common thread? Are there particular games that people always want to talk about? Are there particular moments that people want to talk about?
Giant Stadium is obviously the one. Yeah, I think that's the big one. And the one in Italy when they beat us. Yeah, they're probably two of the biggest games that I ever get spoken about.
How was life transitioning from professional football? Because I assume, I've heard you talk before about the selfishness of being a professional footballer, but the other side of that is the focus of it. It is all-consuming. Elite sport doesn't give you a lot of headspace for a whole pile of other things. How difficult did you find the transition, and what do you now define yourself by?
Yeah, it is hard when you come out of the game and you think, you know, that obviously most people are starting to think about going into management or coaching or some sort of something to do with football. But I didn't. I didn't want to have anything to do with football, really, to be honest. I wanted to watch it still. But I knew that I wasn't going to be, I'd never be a commentator, or I'd never go. I tried one of the, John Giles asked me to go up one time and just try and do the report at the match analysis, but I haven't got the nerves to do that sort of stuff. So I knew I was going to struggle a little bit, but time marches on really quickly, and suddenly you realize you're out of the game full time, and you're not doing maybe so well and stuff like that. So, I was just saying that Sir Alex was always a decent human being for bringing me back to United and stuff like that, for just to talk to people after the games and stuff like that. So that was a nice gesture from him.
And I suppose one of the things was, if you were at your level in the modern era, you would have ended the game with such a gigantic pile of cash that you wouldn't have had to fret about any of that.
Yeah, that would have been nice. They should have just given me some anyway, I think. But I think the amounts that players get paid these days is probably slightly too much, in my opinion. But, that's the going rate for players these days. But I wouldn't have swapped my era for any amount of money, really, to be honest.
Do you regard your era as a heyday?
Yeah, and I think you were allowed tackle in those days as well. So, but it was just a wonderful time to play football.
So tell us then, what is it that currently you are, a bit like looking back at the game and saying, what are you most proud of? What are you now most proud of? Is it being a dad? Is it being a grandfather? What are the things that you're...
Well, being a grandfather, I think it was last night I became grandfather again.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
So, boy or girl?
Girl.
So how many grandkids is this?
That's, hang on.
Oh, it's a good sign if you have to count them. That's quite a few.
I think that's six now.
Is it?
Yeah, six.
And your most recent girl, have you had a chance to meet her yet?
No, I haven't.
Looking forward to it?
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Are you a good grandfather?
I think so. I do believe so. You'd have to ask my kids whether I am. And I know, I think I am, yeah.
And is it nice being grandfather? I hear people tell me, I was actually talking to a fellow recently who told me that in his view, it was significantly better than being a father because, first of all, you can give them back. But other than that,
exactly,
you're not responsible for development and standards and all the rest. You get to be a bit indulgent.
Yeah, exactly. I do love being a grandfather, and it's a wonderful thing. So, and just this morning I got a call about 4:30 or something like that, and she was here.
Well, that's great. Now that you have the free travel, you can take her on the bus and show around.
Exactly, exactly.
Tell us then about your decision to get involved with the Movember thing. First of all, are you going to grow the moustache?
I'm going to try and grow a moustache.
Have you ever had a moustache? Like a successful, proper, honest to God?
No, I don't think I'd ever be able to grow a proper. But a scruffy kind of look.
So you're going to be scruffy for Movember?
Scruffy.
So tell us then, the decision to get involved, this links back into the thing of you being willing to talk about mental health and those kind of issues. Why did you want to? Because obviously in doing this, it's going to bring up an awful lot of the stuff that you've talked about before, and it'll all get rehashed. Any concerns about that?
Not at all. Pringles asked me to get involved in this, and I was delighted to do it, to be honest. You know, and any little bit of work and stuff like that can and help others talk about things, especially men's issues and stuff like that. So some men seem, they want to be the macho people and hide certain things and stuff like that. It's always good to talk, I believe, anyway.
Did you find that once you began to open up about any of the issues that you had, did people share their own issues with you?
No, not really, to be honest, because they're probably looking at me and saying he'll go out and blab that to someone else. But no, I just find that, you know, it seems to be a man thing that when you do have troubles and stuff like that, you don't want to be blaring them out like and stuff like that. But you know, you've got to, if you're feeling some depression like I did at certain stages in my life, I just didn't want people on, you know, knowing about it and stuff like that. So the bottom of a glass was the easiest place for me to go to.
Lastly, on that note, you find yourself in the position of sort of national treasure, quasi god, respected by all and sundry, yada yada. Is that annoying for a man who's shy? Is it annoying to be in a position where people always come up to you and say, Paul?
Not at all. No. I love talking to people. People think because I'm shy and stuff like that, that I don't like talking to people. I love having chats and stuff like that. But I just, yeah, I think if they come on too strong with the, that match was great and this match was great. Well, then I mean, I've heard it a few times and I think, okay, and then you'd want to walk off and stuff like that. But it's lovely then to hear that people like what you used to do and stuff, and you tell you did it well.
So it's okay to pester you, but not with post-match analysis?
Yes, that'd be great. That'd be great.
Paul, thank you very much. And if you have a look at any of the Pringles cans, tubes, I think is the proper term, you'll see they have Scan My Mo to Help a Bro on them and the QR code on the Pringles mustache. The one and only Paul McGrath. Thanks.
Listen, thanks so much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.